the Teschen, case number 252617.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Ryan Conan, and I represent the plaintiff in this matter. This court should reverse the lower court decision because there was no probable cause to arrest plaintiff, and there were also no probable cause to prosecute plaintiff. But first, what I would like to bring to the attention of this court is the fact that, I mean, what's the point of requesting a warrant? Because in this case, my client was arrested a year after the alleged crime without a warrant. So is probable cause something that we can put a layaway or bank and then wait whenever it's...
Yes, but if there is probable cause, even without a warrant, then these suits don't lie. Isn't that our law, what we're bound by?
Yes, but that is when there's exigent circumstances. But here, there was no exigent circumstances. He has plenty of time.
No. If there is probable cause, then an arrest and a malicious prosecution don't lie, regardless of exigency and other things. It may be good to get a warrant, but in terms of your suit, that is barred if there is probable cause. So the issue was there probable cause given the evidence of your client's connection with the crime? So you ought to address that because that's the only issue before us.
Well, I will address it. There was also no probable cause to arrest my client. And that's, because first, what we learned from this court, in order to gauge whether there was probable cause, we have to define the crime and then see if the elements are present. As you will see in this, the lower court decision, the lower court never defined the crime that my client is charged with to even gauge or assess any probable cause in this case. Because this is accused of selling drugs under a New York law. And from what we learned from this court, you have to define the crime according to state law first.
Wasn't there a photo of a car that was in his name and was used by the drug dealer?
It wasn't used by the drug dealer. There was his car. Register under his name, but nobody seen him. Nobody proved that was him beyond the way. Anybody can use anybody's car, but they didn't see him behind the wheel, and they did not arrest him that day to see if that was him. They let him go, and a year later they arrest him to say that you the one who were in this car and who sold the drugs, and which drug anyway? No drug was found. They didn't have the drug. So how can you arrest him for that? That's the first probable cause. Now, when we come to malicious prosecution, as the court, this court has warned us, we cannot conflate probable cause in false arrest with probable cause in malicious prosecution. So now, how were they going to prosecute him? Which evidence were they going to present to the grand jury if they want to prosecute him? We have nothing. So how could the court determine that they are probable cause to prosecute him? We cannot conflate both. Because in the latter, it's only if the plaintiff could be successfully prosecuted. And I don't see how they would ever try to prosecute him on the charges. Now, why should this court deny immunity to this officer? Because his only intent was to squeeze information out of my client against the individual named the initial TDT. That's all he was interested in.
Yeah, you say that they were trying to get him to cooperate. I understand your argument there. But how does that affect the case before us? Why does the fact that they were trying to get him to cooperate have anything to do with the suit, either for false arrest or malicious?
Well, it has everything to do with it because it shows malicious intent. Because we need malicious intent in order to prosecute, to continue. So it has everything to do with it. If they're not interested in the crime they're charging me with, and they're interested in something else,
isn't it proper to ask somebody who has been arrested if they're willing to cooperate? Because that may determine the charges that are brought, whether you ask the court to give a lower sentence. Why isn't that a perfectly proper step?
I agree. That would be it. But first, you have to determine that the crime you're charging him with, you have the ingredient and everything to charge him with his crime. And then you can go on and get more information. But here, where's the drugs?
Mr. Conan, would you address why, and I appreciate your arguments about the absence of probable cause, but would you address why there's not arguable probable cause under our case law? So why the officer here, Officer Tashin, didn't reasonably believe that he had probable cause, and why other officers who are similarly situated wouldn't similarly believe or might have a disagreement about whether probable cause existed?
Yes, Your Honor, I will address that. The contention here is that he knew that he didn't have the drugs. So he knew that he didn't have probable cause, and that's why he didn't go to...
Go ahead, please.
So you're saying they had to have the drugs as opposed to the messages and the car registered in his name and the observation of the two cars pulling next to each other, that was not enough to establish even arguable probable cause to arrest?
No, Your Honor, it's not enough because, first of all, we cannot tie the messages to him because nowadays with Facebook messages, anybody can create a Facebook account.
Why do you say that they can't tie the messages to him? If, as I understand it, it was his account. That's...
No, Your Honor, it wasn't his account.
It was in his name, correct?
Yes.
It was in his name.
Yeah, the same was his name.
We're talking about arguable probable cause and a reasonable basis to believe that he has committed this crime. And here, just on that fact, there's a reasonable basis to believe that the messages that appear on an account that's in his name are his messages. It might be wrong, but do you agree that it's reasonable to think that if I see messages coming out of an account with your name, that you're responsible for the messages? Is that reasonable?
Yeah, I wouldn't think it's reasonable. I will try to authenticate the account first because that account can be forged.
Okay.
Nothing to lie under my name. And it's here, they had plenty of time to do that. That's my issue. A year later, couldn't they go to authenticate the account to see if it was actually under his name? They didn't. Now, this is the summary judgment stage.
Is it the law that they have an obligation to rule out possible innocent explanations before pursuing what appears facially to be probable cause to arrest?
Yeah, Your Honor, I believe yes, because if you don't do that, you're going to have a lot of people being arrested.
Counsel, you may be right, but there are hundreds of cases where this court has decided the opposite way, that they don't have a duty to do that. And if a reasonable person would think there might be, then there is arguable probable cause. And, you know, you're saying your man was innocent and, in fact, charges were dropped. But that doesn't mean, under the law as it's been decided and that we have to follow, that there wasn't an arguable argument.
But even if there was arguable probable cause, what about the malicious prosecution? We can also use arguable cause when we know that we could not prosecute him, when we know that the prosecution could never be successful. Can we hang on arguable probable cause and go along? My point is here, how could they prosecute him?
So you've reserved some time for rebuttal.
Yeah.
And we'll hear from Mr. Woods.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Judge, and may it please the court. Patrick Woods on behalf of the respondent state investigator. I'd like to start with the arguable probable cause and qualified immunity piece because I think it is the most clear at its core.
As you address that, could you also address the year-long delay?
Certainly. The year-long delay was the result, and the record is clear about this. The plaintiff here was, I don't know about peripheral, but he was not the center of a multi-party, multi-target state investigation. And in fact, the warrant that got his Facebook messages and the surveillance that resulted in seeing his Jeep meeting with the other individual being investigated was part of that investigation. It's undisputed in the record that the delay was that they didn't want to arrest him right away because it might jeopardize the investigation into the other target.
He's a smaller actor, basically, is the view, and it's a larger investigation, and you don't want to blow the investigation by arresting him.
Exactly right.
And I think your counsel on the other side would argue that there was at least some duty as the investigation proceeded to examine more closely the material that gave rise to the arguable probable cause that we're discussing, and to consider in a reasonable way whether to pursue with the prosecution when more evidence became clear over the course of that time. Is there no increasing obligation, or you can go with the arguable probable cause and qualified immunity that you're relying on now, even a year later after the initial material became available?
You can rely on it going forward unless something comes to light that dissipates the existence of that arguable probable cause. I think this
and
court's
time
cases-
is not enough. Might not time by itself be enough in the appropriate circumstances?
Perhaps I wouldn't want to say that there's no theoretical circumstances in which time is not enough, but time in this circumstance, I would say, is primarily accounted for by the existence of statutes of limitations.
Opposing counsel essentially says you waited a long time, and then you essentially said, unless you cooperate with us and tell us things, which he's saying, I don't know, so I can't, we'll go after you. I mean, that's the basis of his argument, that somehow the government was threatening him, unless you cooperate, we go after you. Now, what do you say to that?
I mean, I would say, one, nothing in the record really supports that, other than that there was an attempt to get him to cooperate with the investigation, which you would expect in most multi-target investigations, that there was any even promise that he would not be prosecuted as opposed to being prosecuted on a lesser charge, for example, in exchange for his cooperation. But I would also want to remind the court that, in fact, the dissipation of time is something that I think is very reasonably understood to not be a problem here, because the state investigator, within a month and a half of arresting him, consulted with the county district attorney and an assistant district attorney, asked if there was probable cause, was told there was probable cause, he could proceed with an arrest if he wanted to. And there's not only the officer saying that, there's an affidavit in the record from the assistant district attorney to that effect. I mean, at its core, what qualified immunity is for is to protect reasonable officers when they're behaving in a reasonable manner.
Did they ever find out who was in the Jeep?
I don't think so, no. But it was certainly reasonable for an officer to think that the plaintiff was the one in the Jeep that he owned, which is not in dispute.
Yeah.
Especially when a Facebook account with the plaintiff's name on it agreed to meet the other party at the exact place that they met, at the time that they met, and the other party was seen getting in and out of the Jeep. So there's nobody saw the plaintiff himself in the Jeep, but there's certainly more than enough evidence for a person of ordinary caution to think that he was the one in the Jeep exchange involved in that narcotics.
And was it ever determined who was actually engaging in the messaging on Facebook?
To my knowledge, no. But again, it's the sort of the same information works helpfully in the other way. It's his name on the account, and then it's his car that shows up to meet the other party. The fact that it's his car that shows up is additional evidence that it's his Facebook account.
So it was never determined that it was not him?
No, and nor does the negative need to be proven for purposes of a probable cause determination.
Ultimately, charges were dropped because you didn't feel you had enough evidence to show beyond a reasonable doubt.
Well, I don't know. The record doesn't reflect why the charges were dropped. The case was transferred from one county district attorney to another district attorney for a conflict. The reasons, the nature of the conflict is also not in the record.
But that may have been the explanation by itself.
It's possible. The investigator sort of speculated in his deposition that the other county, like it was just too much for the other county, and this case was, again, more of a peripheral one, so they dropped it. He expressed some frustration in his deposition because he thought it should have continued to go forward and it was going to be a relatively easy case to prove. So, at the end of the day, all we need is that a reasonable officer would have thought that they could make an arrest and commence these prosecutions. And I think it is asking quite a lot of an officer unless the district attorney is giving them obviously really bad advice, if they consult with the county district attorney and get told there's probable cause, a reasonable officer should be able to rely on that and be entitled to the protections of qualified immunity. And just to address, as Judge Calabresi is absolutely correct, in terms of a warrantless arrest, it's been settled since at least 1925 in Carroll versus the United States that you can make a warrantless arrest based on probable cause in a public place. Here, the arrest was in the state police barracks, and plaintiff was there with counsel. And it's also not, in fact, clear in the record that he was lured there. There's a number of assertions that he was lured there so that he could be questioned without counsel. But I would refer you to pages A78 and 80 of the record, which is the plaintiff's deposition, where he says he was asked either to show up with counsel on A78 or with or without counsel on A.
But so I think your opposition is arguing that it raises questions about potential malice, to have had a year, the evidence not changed on which the warrantless arrest was made, and so ample opportunity to procure a warrant and get the clear validation of the reasonableness of the arrest. And so isn't that a potential basis for inferring malice about going forward?
I would not think so, particularly not in a scenario where the officer has consulted with the county district attorney.
But that's not so much short of going and actually getting the warrant issued on the same basis. I mean, an informal consultation with the district attorney isn't really a substitute for obtaining a warrant.
Certainly, if he had obtained the warrant, then we wouldn't even need to, we don't need to get into the qualified immunity question anyway, but we wouldn't even theoretically need to get there because there would be a presumption of probable cause that arises out of the warrant itself. We've not argued that he has that presumption here, but in terms of the protections for a reasonable officer.
We're not arguing that the cases aren't your way in that, but just really talking more about appropriate procedure and whether it wouldn't have been wise to have gotten the warrant.
Well, and ultimately, Judge Calabresi, I kind of think that kind of timing question is one that we have to give some deference to the law enforcement officials who are conducting these kinds of multi-party investigations.
Well,
to determine,
certainly makes life easier for us if you'd gotten a warrant. As you said, we wouldn't be here at all. And that is also a consideration that the officers and all of you might take into account. What makes life easier for judges?
I can't speak to the wisdom of getting the warrant or not getting the warrant in terms of anticipating future potential 1983 suits arising out of it. Again, my office is here is in a defense capacity for the state official, not the county district attorney's office. But I take your point, Judge, that certainly you would not even need to worry about a lot of the other potential issues in the case had a warrant been obtained. But even without the a warrant being obtained, it seems very clear here that there was more than enough for a reasonable officer to think there was probable cause. There was probable cause based on what's here, and there was more than enough for an argument to be made about whether probable cause was here. And those are both enough for the officer to have qualified immunity.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Judge.
Yes, the first thing I want to address is that the district attorney is not a neutral arbiter. If the officer was actually sure that he had probable cause, he would have gone to a judge who is neutral. So I don't know why my opponent keep bringing up the advice that he sought from the district attorney. That cannot be dispositive of probable cause.
No, in part because he's relying on some case law in which we've said that when an officer relies on advice from the prosecutor, that certainly informs our decision about whether arguable probable cause or probable cause exists.
Yes, Your Honor, but I also cited another case that went against that to say that the district attorney is not, opinion is not dispositive of probable cause. And that's one. Now, my other question, what happened inside the Jeep? Because to charge him with the sale of a drug in the third degree, we must be sure that something was a change to amount to that crime. We don't even know.
What happened?
Inside the Jeep? What was a change inside the Jeep to give them probable cause that it was in the, a crime of sale of drug that occurred this particular under this particular statute? He didn't see anything. So what gives them?
You think he had to see a handoff of drugs in order for probable cause to be created, notwithstanding the Facebook messages and the implications of that and the kind of interaction between the two cars?
Yeah, that's what the law, the case law says.
The case law says you have to see the drugs being handed from one person to another.
No, no, sorry to interrupt you. But because they say you have to see a hand-to-hand exchange, we don't even know if we exchange anything that day. So the statute that we're charging him with, where did he observe that occurring? That's my issue.
Well, we've got your argument well in mind. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
We'll reserve the decision.